okay, we can brush our teeth, floss, use mouthwash to protect our teeth, but most people go to their local dentist on a couple of occasions every year. But that comes at a cost. Do we pay too much for dental services? And does the expense sometimes drive people away from going? With this in mind, we decided to focus this week's industry review on dentistry. I'm delighted now to be joined in studio by PJ Byrne. He's the president of the Irish Dental Association. Susan Kiley is the principal dentist at Fitzwilliam Dental. And Rod Crichton, he's the general dental practitioner from One Manor Place out there in Harbour Hill. You're all very, very welcome to the programme. And I've been looking forward to this piece. PJ Byrne, I want to start with you. My grandfather was a dentist. I remember as a child waiting up in the old, in his surgery in Clonmel when I was only a little, and being fascinated by all these drills and machinery and all that. It's come a long way since then, PJ. Can maybe you set the scene for us about the state of the industry here in Ireland?
Yeah, I mean, as you've said, there have been huge advances in the last 30, 40 years. We've huge advances in diagnostics, things like x-rays, where we now have 3D x-rays, etc., that can give us a huge insight into what's going on. There's a huge drive towards minimally invasive dentistry, which is obviously a lot easier for the patient. And of course, improved cosmetics, improved preventive aspects of dentistry as well. And of course, in that time when your grandfather was in practice, there was, you know, no such thing really as dental implants. And yeah, that has, again, revolutionised the options that are available for patients.
Okay. I'd like to bring in Susan Kiley from the Fitzwilliam Dental Practice. Interesting, among our three guests here, I believe all three of you have worked in the UK.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And Susan, I wanted to ask you about the parallels of maybe the NHS dental system and our own. What are the key differences?
Well, I suppose I'd have to say that I worked in the UK 20 years ago, and I worked for 5 years in the NHS and then went on to private practice. And in the NHS, obviously, the population is entitled to NHS practice where they can find an NHS dentist. But over the time I was there, quite a lot of dentists actually moved out of that system because they felt that it was underfunded and that they couldn't just make it, pay. It was costing too much to provide the service.
Okay.
So they moved into the private arena.
Let me bring in our third dentist. He's Rod Crichton. Rod, you're very welcome to the programme. Am I right in saying you came from across the water to us here?
Exactly.
Okay, so maybe you tell us about the NHS system and why you left it to come to these shores. Was it love or dentistry that brought you to Ireland?
Well, I suppose ultimately it was love that brought me here. Love of dentistry? Well,
not quite.
The NHS, again, I'd have to kind of echo Susan's point that I left in 2000, and there has been quite a bit of a change in the NHS system since that. But certainly when I was there, and I believe some of these principles still apply, it was a very, you had to work fast. You had to get through a lot of patients. Sort of pilot high, sell it cheap, really, would be the NHS. And though a lot of people were able to make a living, it was a hard living to make. And I don't think it necessarily was the best for the patients often.
Okay. Get your text into us, guys. 53106. It'll only cost you 30 cents. We've got three dentists in here, so we're willing to answer any questions you throw at us. Price, quality, whatever it is. Get them into us here at 53106. Peter, can I go back to you and maybe ask you just about a couple of things? I suppose the texts are starting to come in about price already. We'll get it out of the way. The disparity of, I suppose, the price to the consumer in Ireland versus the Republic. We've got dental tourism in Eastern Europe. Just give us the official position of the Irish Dental Association into the tariffs that are actually charged.
Well, I think before we discuss the nitty-gritty of it, I think it's important to understand that we do live in a high-price economy. And, you know, the expenses, the running expenses of a practice here in Ireland are considerable. We have no state subsidisation. We have no state grant. For instance, in the UK or the north of Ireland, there's a 40,000 subsidy towards setting up practice, which we don't have.
It's all privately funded. And that's a good point you make. Could I ask you typically how much it would cost to set up a dental practice? How expensive is that equipment?
The equipment is extremely expensive. I mean, dental chairs, x-ray machine. An x-ray machine could be anywhere between 5 and 8,000 euro wow. for a simple x-ray machine.
Right.
You know, an x-ray processor, it could be 7, 8,000 yeah. euro. You know, if you have an orthopantomogram, which is the x-ray, which takes the overall view, I mean, that's over 20,000 euro.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're talking about huge expenses. And you're talking about nowadays where the premises have to be of a very, very high caliber. Patient expectations are very high. And as a result, the expense of producing that, along with the staff to support that, is very high, because patients expect a high level of customer service when they ring your telephone. They expect an answer. They expect somebody to deal with them in a very professional way, which is absolutely correct. But that all comes at a cost.
And I would suggest that the point that you made earlier about the 40,000 capital grant that's available in other jurisdictions and not here is pretty much unknown to the consumer.
Yes, it
okay.
is.
Okay. Susan, can I ask you, I have a text in here, you might help me with the first one. George is asking why root canals are so expensive. What's involved in a root canal treatment?
Well, a root canal treatment involves the removal of the pulp or the nerve in a tooth, going into the canals in the tooth, and that can vary from a single rooted tooth at the front of the mouth to a molar at the back, which can have three or four canals. So the time and expertise and the materials involved in actually providing a standard of care root canal are expensive. Again, as PJ referred to, we have the whole totality of the costs that allow the dentist and the dental team to be in a premises with equipment, with time, and also obviously, you know, the training and ongoing expense of training and upskilling that comes with being a professional dentist.
Okay.
So I think that really is, it's, you know, it's a service. Root canals are different. Circumstances obviously relate to patients. You know, we have our own individual needs.
They're pretty painful as well. I've had one.
Well, not always. Not always. It's a bit of a myth, really, Bobby.
Well, I don't know. I it was a couple of years ago now. Rod Crichton, I wanted to ask you about the influence of Dr. Google in relation to dentistry. Self-diagnosis, is that a problem? People getting a bit of information and maybe not really being informed properly?
Well, I don't know. It can be a problem. It doesn't have to be a problem. I suppose information, it's better to have somebody who's informed at some level when you talk to them. It means you don't have to start from first principles and everything you're describing. But if someone comes with, shall we say, an opinion which can't really be justified on a scientific basis, you almost have to spend time dismantling a prejudice before you can get to start to talk about baseline facts.
Well, we know what Clint Eastwood said about opinions, but we won't repeat it here on air. But I have a text in here, Rod, that says, I go to Rod because he plays great music. And that's from Paul in Stonybatter. Tell us about your music. What do you do there?
Well, I just have an iPod.
Yeah?
iPod. I mean, I'm an old school guy. I just have an iPod.
And so really I come into you to get a filling or a cavity done or whatever. So you say to me, Bobby, would you like to listen to some Pink Floyd or The Grateful Dead, or how does it work?
No,
and,
I'm afraid
I'm a dictator.
I wake
up and it's finished when it's all over.
No, I'm a dictator, Bobby. I just want
you decide. You decide.
But I like to think that what I choose would help anyone to hopefully feel a bit more chilled.
Good man. PJ, can I ask you about other trends, I suppose, that are happening with and, you know, I suppose every business is influenced by technology. You mentioned the cost of the equipment and that there earlier. You mentioned also, you know, implants having a huge effect on diet. But the whole emphasis on not trying to do extractions, like I presume that's around for a long time, that you really want to keep as many of a person's teeth as possible. And extraction, is it the last resort?
Well, it is the last resort, and sometimes it's necessary and sometimes there are no alternatives. But I suppose when I look back over my career, when I started in the Dublin Dental School working in 1982, I was doing 27 to 30 extractions myself every morning in the clinic there. And by 2007, that had dropped dramatically. The six house surgeons that were there in 2007 wouldn't have done that in a week. So that's a real positive in terms of showing that dental health had improved and patient expectations and patient wishes had changed very much in the meantime. Unfortunately, we've suffered a setback to some degree during the recession and, you know, those extraction figures have increased. And that's not been helped by government policy, where government policy has taken away the preventive aspects of dentistry from our patients and forced them into the extraction trap again.
So is it the correlation where somebody doesn't go for a regular checkup because of economic situations that their teeth actually decay further and an extraction is the result of not having good preventative care?
That may be, but it's also that the state schemes don't allow for preventive treatment and they don't allow for reparative treatment.
I see.
And extraction is what is available.
I see.
And that is not the way in 2016 we should be thinking.
Absolutely.
But thankfully we've had a meeting with the new minister. His approach seems to be very positive and I would look forward to working with him to reverse what has been happening over the last number of years.
Okay. Susan, another couple of queries you might help me with. Where would your panel suggest going in the world for implant work, as it's impossible to pay for here? One implant is €2,000 here.
Sure. Well, Bobby, I think that I would obviously suggest that you go to your local dentist for advice, that you look at the options for your particular situation, whether or not an implant is the only solution to your circumstance. And then I think that the convenience and the expertise, the supportive care and the cost that can be paid over time may make it a more worthwhile investment.
Okay.
I mean, implant work and work of that nature is an investment in your lifelong health. It's not just a commodity or a transaction that's carried out at any particular time.
So think about it and research it, is
absolutely,
what you're saying.
Absolutely, yes.
Rod, I'll put one to you. I'm missing front teeth and I'm too embarrassed to visit the dentist. It's affecting my confidence and would like to get something permanent work done via implants but can't afford it. So there's two things there. It's from John. He's too embarrassed to go. It's affecting his confidence. And he wants to get permanent work done, but he can't afford it. So a few queries within a query there.
You're in a tough spot there, John, and I'm sorry to hear that you're feeling distressed. And I suppose I'm most sorry to hear that you feel too embarrassed to come. I mean, I would like to think that if you turn up at your friendly local dentist, that we will welcome you in and we won't be judgmental. We'll be saying, look, you know, let's see what we can do to help you here. Look at the problems and really see what's underlying them and see how we can move things forward for you.
I'd like to move finally, if I could, just to the business aspect of running a dental practice. And I was looking through all your the notes that you sent in beforehand, and I was looking at how you would market your business. And again, it can be kind of challenging to be marketing a professional service. And I note that to a man or a lady, that each of you said that word of mouth is really the best. And it's funny, I didn't mean to come up with a pun there around dentistry with word of mouth, but is how important, Susan, is word of mouth?
I think word of mouth is critical. I think that patients are happy to refer other friends and people they know to a dentist that they've had a good experience with, and all the evidence even to date. I saw a research document and a survey result from Software of Excellence just this week that said that, you know, despite the fact that social networking and external marketing is obviously used by dentists nowadays, the biggest driver for new patient referrals is word of mouth. So it's in the dentist's interest to have good.
There you go. Some things never change.
Some things never change.
Keep stuff simple. Well,
yes.
Listen, thank you all very much for coming into us. Huge thanks to my guests, PJ Byrne, Susan Kiley, and Rod Crichton. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you,
and very informed debate about dentistry, of which I've no doubt that our listeners are very, very interested.